Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning, you may be seated. First case on our calendar, 06-1731, Daimler Chrysler Corporation versus William Wilkins, Tax Commissioner, Mr. Stivus.
Good morning. At issue in the cases before the court today is the status, the sales and use tax status of goodwill repairs. These are transactions in which an automobile dealer performs a repair not covered by a warranty, the cost of which is borne by the manufacturer of the covered product, in this case, Daimler Chrysler. In our brief, we've submitted several arguments in support of the proposition that Chrysler is not subject to sales or use tax on the amounts it pays to its dealers for the cost of parts and labor associated with a goodwill repair. I'd like to focus on just three of those arguments today. These are arguments that haven't previously been considered by the court. The first addresses whether or not Chrysler is properly deemed to be the consumer of the parts and labor associated with a goodwill repair. We have argued in Proposition of Law 2 of our brief that under the definition of consumer found in the sales tax chapter, and that's Code Section 573901D, that Chrysler isn't the consumer of those parts and labors, and of course we would like you to embrace that argument, and if you do, then both of the assessments that are in issue today should be reversed. But I want to go beyond the definition of a consumer as it existed on September 29th, 1997. On that date, it was amended, and it has an additional component these days found in subdivision D5. And what D5 says is that if you sell a repair service, if you sell a repair service, you're deemed to be the consumer of any parts used in furtherance of that repair service. When you keep in mind the transactions that underlie the assessments involved in today's cases, these are the transactions in which an automobile dealer performs a repair services for Chrysler. In that transaction, it's very clear that the person selling the repair service is the dealer, and therefore under subdivision D5 should be viewed as the consumer of the parts used in that transaction. Now, we made that argument. It seems very clear on its face, but the Board of Tax Appeals rejected it for three reasons.
Counsel, before you go into your three reasons, who is the dealer reimbursed in any way by Chrysler?
Yes.
For these repair services and any parts that are put into the car in this goodwill context?
Yes, in an everyday transaction, if you own the car, you take the car into your dealership with some defect, assuming it's covered by the goodwill policy. What would occur is that the dealer would repair the car using whatever parts were necessary, expending whatever labor was necessary. And there's a pricing mechanism pursuant to which Chrysler reimburses or pays the dealer just as an ordinary transaction. And that's a goodwill repair. So,
And your argument is that that goodwill repair has already been built into the original sale price and a tax has been paid on that when the car was purchased originally.
That's right. That relates to the resale argument that I'll get to in a few moments.
So it's not so much goodwill then, is it?
No, not really. I mean, that's the common
Call
name
it that,
used
but
in
it's
the
really
industry.
The customer's paid for it for
but
tax purposes
it's
at least.
It's built into the price of the car. Before I get to that, I'd like to finish up on the consumer argument because I think it's a very good one. As I mentioned, the board rejected that argument for three reasons. The first is their reliance or focus on the use tax definition of consumer, which says or which excludes persons who don't pay any compensation for the parts or services that are being acquired. But that's really not a problem here because keeping in mind the transaction we're focusing on, the seller, the consumer, is the dealer, and the dealer very definitely pays its suppliers for the parts used in a goodwill repair. So that's really not a problem. I think the board was just confused on that one. The second point they made was that that Chrysler was the consumer of the parts used in a goodwill repair transaction, and they got to that by focusing on their observation that Chrysler resells the benefit of the repair service to whoever owns the car. But again, that's not the transaction that's being assessed. The transaction is the one immediately prior in which the dealer is performing the goodwill repair service for Chrysler. And in that set of circumstances, it's very definitely Chrysler that's the consumer. The third point they made was that, well, the definition of consumer doesn't grant any exemptions, but that misses the point. If you have a transaction that's a sale that is not subject to tax as to a given person by virtue of the definition of consumer, then that transaction, if it occurred in Ohio, is not subject to the use tax either. And that's by virtue of Section 5741.02C2.
So if the dealer is the consumer, there is no tax on the dealer.
For a different reason.
For a different reason.
And that's what I'll get to right now. One last point. I've covered what the Board of Tax Appeals had to say about the consumer argument. The tax commissioner took a different approach. The tax commissioner says that when you look at the language of 573901D5, the reference to property is only a reference to tools and machinery and equipment. But as I set forth in the brief, if you just set the language side by side, it's not limited in that fashion at all. The code section refers to any property used to perform a goodwill or any repair, for that matter.
Is there a tax treatment or an attempt to harvest a tax from either the dealer or the manufacturer when there are mandated recall repairs due either to something the company discovered or something the government discovered, and so everybody gets a notice your car has a defect.
My answer to your question harkens back to the General Motors case that we argued 3 or 4 years back. General Motors' overall program included recalls, and in that case, the state took the position that the money expended by General Motors in that case was subject to purchase parts used to perform the recall repairs was subject to tax. So they're pretty, I should add a caveat here. Since 1993, this is an area of the law that's just been in a state of flux. The law has changed by statute 2 or 3 times in that period. So you've really got to focus in on a time frame and look to the laws that existed in that time frame to come to the appropriate conclusion. But at that time, that was the result. If for whatever reason you don't accept the notion that it's the dealer that is the consumer in these post-September 1997 transactions, and instead it's Chrysler, then the second argument comes into play, and that relies on Section 573901E15, a newly minted exemption effective September of 97, and that says if you purchase property with the intention of using it to perform a repair service, your purchase is exempt to the extent you use the property or you permanently transfer the property to the consumer of the repair service. Well, if Chrysler's going to be the consumer, that code section, that exemption squarely applies. Now, the board said, in rejecting the argument, something that I really don't understand. They said, Chrysler's the consumer in this transaction, therefore this E15 exemption doesn't apply. But it's precisely because Chrysler is the consumer that it does apply. Chrysler weren't the consumer, it wouldn't be subject to tax for that reason alone. It wouldn't have need to rely on this exemption or any other. And I would say, too, the board devoted all of one paragraph to that analysis, and it, I don't know what they were thinking. I think they might just be confused on that point. The commissioner's argument is different. It's the same argument he made with regard to the definition of consumer, and that is that the reference to property refers only to machinery and equipment or tools and supplies. But if you give it just a moment's thought, you'll know that that's incorrect. This exemption applies to property that is permanently transferred to somebody else. You don't permanently transfer machinery or equipment or tools. You transfer the component parts of whatever it is that's being fixed. And so, if you conclude that Chrysler is the consumer, this exemption should apply for post-September 29th, 1997 transactions. What I've discussed to this point addresses just parts. It doesn't, these two provisions don't encompass labor, but the purchase for resale exemption does. If it is deemed that a dealer sells a repair service to Chrysler, Chrysler in turn resold that repair service to the owner of the vehicles. The Board of Tax Appeals rejected that argument for one reason. They said that with regard to the resale argument, what was resold by Chrysler wasn't in the same form as it was acquired by Chrysler. Now, this court in 2006 decided the Casino case, Casino Construction. And in that case, you set forth a pretty easy standard to employ. You ask a single question. Does the purchaser, here Daimler Chrysler, change the goods or services it has purchased in any way? And the answer here is no. Unlike the employment service cases relied on by the Board of Tax Appeals in these goodwill repair transactions, as I've indicated to you, Justice O'Donnell O'Connor, the dealer performs a specific repair to a specific car, and that vehicle is then turned over without any alteration or change or amendment or anything else being done to it by Chrysler. It's clearly in the same state or form as received by Chrysler.
Mr. Steiner, may I ask you to comment on the General Motors versus Wilkins case where we have upheld the assessment of the use tax?
Yes.
That interplay or interface with your position at all?
It does, and I've deliberately avoided or focused my comments today on post-September 29th, 1997 provisions because those provisions, none of what I've addressed today, was considered by the court in General Motors.
Okay.
Not the resale argument, not the other two statutory provisions. We have made arguments in the brief attempting to distinguish the General Motors decision where we thought it was appropriate, and I'll let the brief speak for itself on those points. But on these statutory points, this is virgin territory.
Okay.
Last point on the in the same form requirement. This case is closest to the CCH Computax case as opposed to the employment services cases that the Board of Tax Appeals relied on. In CCH Computax, lawyers and accountants hired CCH Computax to prepare tax returns for their clients. The returns were prepared, resubmitted to the attorney or accountant who signed them and passed them along to whoever their clients may have been. In that set of circumstances, this court held that there was no change in the state or form of the tax return. And by way of analogy, I substitute a motor vehicle for the tax return, and that's exactly what's going on here. General Motor Chrysler does not do anything to the motor vehicle. As a matter of fact, it doesn't see the motor vehicle. These are transactions directly between the dealer and the car owner in general, and Chrysler just pays the cost. Now, the argument advanced by the tax commissioner is a bit different. They, with regard to this resale argument, they say that there was no consideration to support the resale claim. The fact is that, as we've discussed earlier, the purchase price of an automobile includes an amount designed to cover the anticipated cost of future warranty repairs. That price is paid by every car owner, and it's subject to tax at the time of payment by every car owner. So the cost of these repairs have already been taxed once. This effort is an attempt to tax them a second time. It's interesting to note that the Board of Tax Appeals acknowledged the facts that I just referred to, the payment of the compensation for the goodwill repairs and the taxation of it. And their determination is supported by a determination of the Michigan Supreme Court of just a few years back in a case involving General Motors. In that case, which is virtually identical facts, the Supreme Court of Michigan wrote, the cost of the goodwill adjustment policy is included in the retail price of GM vehicles as something that's purchased by customers. So there is a payment.
It's called, probably not your issue, but why is it called goodwill? Goodwill suggests that it's something that the dealer or the company is giving me that I haven't paid for. Just because they want my business, and so they're giving me something free. That's not true, is it?
No.
You think they should, well.
Goodwill is that been used since as long as I can remember. But if you look at the record and the testimony in this case and in General Motors for that matter as well, these are repairs that by and large are granted free of charge, current charge, because the defect being repaired was inherent in the vehicle from the outset. It's not as if you can walk in 5 years after your warranty expired and say, my engine's on the blink, please fix it for me, and they'll do it. They won't do it. They'll fix a latent defect in a vehicle. Last point. I mentioned that the Supreme Court of Michigan has agreed with the Board of Tax Appeals' determination that there is compensation in this case. The tax commissioner himself, the Department of Taxation, has done so as well. They've issued two administrative releases dating back to the mid-1990s when repair transactions, maintenance contracts, were first became taxable. And in those transactions, if I were to buy a repair contract from one of you, paying you $1,000 today, that $1,000 would be subject to tax. And if I showed up 2 years later complaining of a defect and you fixed it and you had to go out and buy a part for $500 to perform that repair transaction, these administrative releases say you can buy that $500 part free of charge because you purchased it for resale, the consideration having come 2 years earlier when I paid you the $1,000 initially. I see my time's expired.
Thank you, Mr. Steinis. Mr. Hubbard.
May it please the court. In this case, we have a situation where there's a consumer, and that consumer under the Ohio sales and use tax law must pay the tax directly to the state of Ohio if the vendor hasn't collected sales tax. And
that's who is the consumer
here.
In your view, Mr. Hubbard?
The consumer in this case, Your Honor, as held by the board and by the tax commissioner, is the car maker, Chrysler. And the vendor is the car dealer, or the various car dealers. The items at issue are, as Justice Moyer said, goodwill repairs, and it's fundamental to recognize that it's totally within the discretion of Chrysler and the car dealers as to whether any car owner receives a goodwill repair part or goodwill repair installation or repair service.
Your whole premise, though, for your argument rests on the assumption that there is nothing in the sales price of the original car that covers goodwill.
It rests, Your Honor, I'd like to, certainly the pricing of the car may include various factors like projected advertising for the car, all sorts of built-in.
But is goodwill included in that price?
It's not consideration for the sale of the car, and the reason for that is the customer isn't even apprised of the goodwill program, the fact that there might be a possibility in the future that that car owner might, in the discretion of Chrysler, receive a repair part or repair service free.
But that discretion has a business basis. It's not if, you know, I run the car into something and a piece breaks, you'll do a goodwill repair for me. It's because I, as the manufacturer, had a defect that may be technically not covered by the warranty anymore, but it was a defect that came from the factory, and so we are going to repair it free of charge so that we uphold the product we're selling you. That's the basis they claim for their, quote, goodwill. It's not any repair. It's a repair that originated in something that the car had when it went from the shop.
Well, the record is very clear, Your Honor, without any dispute, that whatever the basis for the repair is, it's totally in the discretion of Chrysler. And they're not agreeing at the time the car purchase is made that they're going to make that repair.
So
and
you're
free
interpreting
not to.
You're interpreting discretion as, therefore, we have no price basis in the sale of the car for that discretion.
And that's just basic contract law 101. The fact is that if you're the car purchaser and you're not even apprised of the possibility that they might grant you a repair beyond the free beyond the warranty period, and that's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about recalls. Those are different provisions. We're talking about totally discretionary decisions on the part of the dealers acting on behalf of Chrysler and authorized by Chrysler. We're not talking about recalls that are ordered by some governmental authority, Justice Pfeiffer. We're talking about
just so I'm sure, your basis for your argument is that we have to make the legal conclusion that there is no price subsumed in the original purchase of the car for goodwill.
That there's no consideration paid by the car buyer for that.
No price included. Consideration is price in your mind, right?
In that the car owner is not incurring any, has no legal right to any Goodwill repair that is purely a promotional or freebie item to induce future car sales. It's not for the purpose of the current car sale. And we know that for a lot of reasons. They have an extended warranty that they're trying to sell. The manufacturer is trying to sell an extended warranty.
So then, Counselor, you would disagree with the Michigan, the GM Michigan case that explains goodwill as being something that is pervasive in the industry and is built in?
Well, I would quarrel with the conclusion of the court in that case that there was consideration in the initial purchase price for that obligation. What they must be finding in the Michigan case that's not evident in this record is that there was a contractual obligation on the part of the car manufacturer to provide those repairs.
Did they find that?
What's that?
Did they find that in the Michigan case?
I think the decision is totally unclear as to whether they're finding that there is actually a part of the consideration for the purchase of the car is for the sale of the goodwill repair promises. But that's what you'd have to find. I mean, basically, any time that anyone gives away something free, it's for the inducement of future sales. It's not, there's no obligation on the part of the car manufacturer to perform these repairs. And in fact, they don't. Most people, like when I have bought a Chrysler car and I had a warranty, I assumed that it was anything covered by the warranty would be covered. But if it wasn't covered by the warranty, I wouldn't even bring it into the dealer. So I wouldn't avail myself of any free repair. I wouldn't even have the possibility for a freebie. And so how can there be consideration as part of the purchase price of the original car if there's no contractual right that's enforceable to receive the freebie? And that's distinct from a warranty repair where there is. There's a fundamental distinction between a warranty repair and a goodwill repair.
Counsel, I've tried to back up and get my mind around the notion of why there should be a tax on something like this. Forget the statutes. What would be the philosophy of it? And it brought me to the question that you seem not to want to defend. I think there probably are instances in which the state taxes something more than once.
Right.
But you don't seem to want to defend that.
Well, you know, I don't.
You're saying this isn't a second taxation.
No,
but,
I mean, you're paying for the car, and you're paying for the car. You're not paying for
the possibility
that you might get a freebie later.
What if we disagree with you on that thought, that it's...
Right.
What if it is a second taxation?
Well, I mean, certainly it would be a taxation that's permitted under the code, because the free items... Well, first of all, let's take the Coca-Cola bottling versus Kosar case that we emphasize in our brief, and the reply brief doesn't respond to at all. Coca-Cola bottling purchases soda dispensing equipment, and it pays a price on that. The tax commissioner considered Coca-Cola bottling to be the consumer, and that they didn't resell that dispensing equipment to retail establishments that were selling Coca-Cola products. These dispensing machines, transfer of title and possession was transferred from Coca-Cola bottling to the retail establishments. And they argued, Coca-Cola bottling argued, that was a purchase for resale because they were giving these dispensing machines in connection with their sales of Coke products. Just like in here, they're selling cars. You know, Chrysler's selling a car, and then it may subsequently give away a freebie. Well, in Coca-Cola bottling, the freebie was the dispensing equipment. And this court said there were no strings attached to that. That's not a resale. That's a gratuitous conditional transfer of title and possession by Coca-Cola bottling to its retail establishments. And those retail establishments are purchasing Coca-Cola products. But the key was, and surely the cost of that Coca-Cola product incorporates marketing things like these dispensing machines. So if you're just going to follow, it's just straightforward sales and use tax law. This is not any different than those cases. In General Motors versus Tracy involved goodwill repairs. If you look at the board decision, goodwill repairs were involved in that case, and this court affirmed. I mean, so despite what my learned colleague says, That case did involve Goodwill repairs.
Well, I asked him about that question, actually, and he said he's relying on a statutory exemption. I think it's the 5739E15 is what he was talking about.
Right.
And board made a determination that section is just not applicable, and he suggests maybe they gave a short consideration to that viewpoint, but if I understand his argument, it seems as though there's a statutory basis for the exemption here. Would you want to address that?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. And that's an excellent question. I certainly want to address E15. And actually, in my brief, I didn't set forth the most straightforward basis for it, and I apologize for that. This is an extremely straightforward argument on E15. E15 is an anti-pyramid exemption, just as E1, which is the sale for resale in the same form, is, and just as the E9 exemption, which is sale for items used primarily in manufacturing of tangible personal property for sale to others. E15 also is an exemption or exception that applies to the vendor of a taxable service, where that vendor purchases tangible personal property that then becomes an integral part of the service that's provided. A good example is an oil change. Oil changes are repair and maintenance services that are subject to the sales and use tax. The provider of that oil changing service, which I'll call the oil changer, purchases oil. And that oil is accepted by reason of the E15 exception. That because that oil is tangible personal property that's transferred to the purchaser of the service, and it's an integral part of the performance of that service. So that's an exception that's an anti-pyramiding exception, just like the sale for resale in the same form exception is. It's a counterpart to that. And here, the dealer is the provider of the service. All of his arguments basically turn on the argument that there's a sale for resale, that Chrysler is making a resale of the replacement parts and services to its consumers, or to the car owners. And he's finding consideration for that in the former purchase, in the purchase price paid for the car. But when you realize that it's purely a discretionary decision on the part of Chrysler and its dealers to provide anybody with any of the car owners, a lot of car owners never even know about it. Those that do aren't necessarily going to get it. And actually, if you think about this in terms of enhancing customer satisfaction, Chrysler isn't even going to tell necessarily at any point that the customer's receiving a Goodwill repair. Because certainly they wouldn't say beforehand that they are, because can you imagine you go into Chrysler and Chrysler says, oh yeah, we have a Goodwill repair program that we may, in our discretion, give you a Goodwill repair, but we're not going to give it to you. We gave it to so-and-so, but we're not going to give it to you.
Well, to follow Mr. Steiner's argument, the owner of the automobile in that instance should say, well, I paid for it.
Well, that's right, and they wouldn't get it.
Because you argued that in the Supreme Court, so I paid for it.
Yeah, and they wouldn't get it.
Which is not consistent with goodwill, certainly. Yeah. It's not consistent with someone having discretion to decide whether you get the goodwill
or
not.
That's right. In fact, if he's right, then we ought to get, every consumer in Ohio ought to get their own parts for whatever period during the free will period.
Couldn't it be viewed that the discretion is the determination on whether it's a latent defect or whether it's something that is dissipated in the normal use and wear of an automobile? And that's what is solely up to the manufacturer to determine. Is this a latent defect that we have seen in the past or that can be mechanically explained to the and linked to the manufacturing process as opposed to wear and tear that should have been covered maybe under the normal 3-year warranty or whatever?
That's more like the special policy program that you're talking about where they announce to customers that they're recalling vehicles. This is not what we have. That may be, Your Honor, some other repair program, but the Goodwill repair program here isn't limited to that. The record just says that the dealers have discretion to request they get authorization from Chrysler, and it's not limited to that.
It's not more limited to latent defects that are caused.
No, it's not conditioned on that at all. That's not,
That's what opposing counsel explained.
Well, that's if you look at the record, that's simply not the case. It's just not conditioned upon any objective conditions that have to be measured. They don't even communicate any conditions to the customer, and it's purely within the discretion of Chrysler and its dealers as to whether they decide to give a freebie or not.
Counsel, you keep using the word freebie, which to me is unhelpful in terms of
used to induce future car purchases.
Well, perhaps. First of all, it seems like it's the right thing to do.
Right.
All right. Secondly,
but it's not
it may also be helpful to the car company because they're sitting there saying, you know, this particular problem is popping up all the time, mm-hmm. and if we don't take care of it, some class action lawyer is
absolutely
probably going to find out about it, and we're going to have to do it anyway, and the lawyer's going to get most of the
that's right,
money,
and that's
money
a business
the
expenditure they should pay for. Absolutely. If they're that's not something the customer is paying for. That's a business decision they're making.
But when you make
and
a
it's
car,
also used for
when,
sales.
When you make a car or when you make any product, don't you imagine that the folks that are making it make some calculation that there's going to be a certain amount of slippage in this product? There are going to be things that we don't know about. If we knew about them, we wouldn't build it in the first place. So why would we want to have a tax policy? I mean, if there's a dispute here, why should we tip in favor of taxing something that's the right thing to do?
Well, Your Honor, whether it's the right thing or not, and we have lots of cases with safety regulation equipment in the old days, like firefighter, the Chief Justice might recall. The mere fact that it's a good thing to do, or even if it's required to be done, doesn't make it taxable or exempt. And this isn't a question of tipping. This is plain language in contract law. It's not a question of, you know, interpretation. It's a question of application of the plain meaning of the statutes. And as I said, in General Motors, we did have goodwill repair parts. If you look at the board decision, they expressly addressed that. So, I mean, that's precedent right there. And the arguments they're making about E15, Justice O'Donnell, that's predicated on the same arguments that there's a sale for resale here, that the Chrysler is reselling these parts and that they're getting consideration for it. And it's merely the possibility. They're exercising their discretion. There's nothing in the record that provides any objective basis that a customer could come in or a car owner could come in and say, I want that repair part or service outside of the warranty period, and then demand it. They'd have no right to demand it. They'd have no right to get it.
But it isn't their right. It's just what the statute says. A retail sale does not include a sale for property to perform a service listed in B3 if it is to be permanently transferred to the consumer.
Yeah, permanently transferred to the consumer. They're talking about the purchases by the vendor, Your Honor. That, like the oil change situation. So the dealer here, in its purchases of the repair parts, presumably it's purchasing from Chrysler, actually, but that sale would be accepted under E15. It's the level of the transaction. These are anti-pyramiding statutes. That's what E15 is for, that's what E1's for, and that's what E9 is for. All these provisions in 5739.01E relate to that anti-pyramiding. So you don't tax it at two levels, you tax it at one. You don't tax it for the dealer,
Let me ask one more question here. You state that there's no contract that exists between the purchaser and Chrysler or the dealer for these latent defect repairs,
or
goodwill
repairs,
yeah, whatever you want to call them.
It doesn't have to be a latent defect. It can be anything. It doesn't have to be latent defect.
Okay, and then, so you're saying then that there is no portion of the purchase price that is built in to cover this goodwill repair?
Right. And if, let's suppose there was, what
no,
would
wait
it
a
be?
Minute, wait a minute.
Just
answer the question
yes,
I asked.
I'm sorry.
So you're saying that as a matter of law, there is no calculation built into the purchase price for goodwill?
That's right. It's illusory. Whatever they say it is, that's purely in their pricing the car. They're anticipating that they may in the future expend a certain amount for these items.
Well,
but
did,
that's
did
not
they
a
or
guarantee.
Did they not,
that's not a warranty. That's not a contract.
Counselor, did they, the manufacturer, or the seller, Chrysler, did they build in the cost of goodwill repairs in the purchase price?
In their pricing model.
Yes or no?
They testified that they did, but in fact, they can price their cars any way they want. The key is, what are they giving to the consumer? What does the consumer have a right to enforce? They don't have anything to enforce.
Did the record counter, was there anything in the record that countered the testimony that there is a built-in component, a calculation in the purchase price for goodwill.
No, but again, they didn't say what that amount was, and certainly they would have the burden to establish that.
So,
the fact that they allocate a portion of, certainly they don't do it by car, and they don't say to the purchaser, this is part of the cars for this, part of the car purchase is for this, and part of it is for the possibility you might get a free, an item outside the repair.
You need to shorten your answers because you've used well into your time.
Chief, if I could just have one question. Mr. Hubbard, the last statement that you made to Justice O'Connor, is it similar to saying like advertising is built into the cost of the car?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Hubbard. Mr. Steinis, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
And in that 30 seconds, could you answer for me? Obviously, one of the purposes of the General Assembly in levying a tax is to raise revenue. And under your theory, let's put aside for a moment the question of whether or not the consumer pays for this when they buy the car, would anybody pay sales tax on these repairs under your theory?
Sequentially. With the understanding that the car owner does pay for it.
I understand. We're setting that argument aside for the moment.
When the transaction takes place, the parts used should be exempted under E15. So nobody would pay tax on the parts. On the labor, it's a function of whether or not you adopt the purchase for resale argument or not. If you adopt the purchase for resale argument, then the labor wouldn't be subject to tax either. And that's the appropriate result because 3 or 4 or 5 years earlier when the car was purchased and an additional amount was paid to cover the cost of these anticipated goodwill repairs, tax was paid at that point. That's why we're doubling up on tax if we impose a tax at the back end as well. Very quickly, in terms of the General Motors case and whether or not it addressed goodwill repairs, it did, but the relevant point is that this court didn't consider in the General Motors case the purchase for resale argument. It wasn't raised in that case, and that's the only relevance to goodwill repairs in that case.
Mr. Stein, if I buy a car, I'm not told, though, exactly what amount is being charged for this goodwill repair.
The record reflects that there are approximately 30 people in the entire Daimler Chrysler company that know the amount. It's a highly guarded secret from company to company.
Maybe it shouldn't be so highly guarded.
Well, maybe not now.
If a person's paying for it, if someone has discretion to say whether or not you're going to be able to use what you paid for, there's some inconsistency there. Maybe I'm looking at it too simply, but it's goodwill, which would suggest to most people that means you're just going to do this because you want to keep me as a customer. But you're saying, no, you already paid for this, so it's really not goodwill, is it? It's something to which I'm entitled. But maybe I'm entitled and maybe not.
You have an expectation that your claims will be considered at the back end. If they fit within the criterion of the company, the goodwill allowance will be granted. In terms of whether or not customers are aware of this, $59 million worth of goodwill repairs were performed just during the audit period. People know about these programs. Dealers make them aware from time
What's
to time.
What's the point about, what does that mean toward taxation, toward the issue here? The fact that people have benefited, that's nice for them, but how does it relate to the tax issue?
I just wanted to rebut a comment Mr. Hubbard had made that people aren't aware that this program is out there. Okay. They are aware. And in terms of the purchase price, the record is very clear. A portion of the purchase price is designed to cover the anticipated future cost of goodwill repairs. The board found that. The Michigan Supreme Court found that. I think it speaks for itself. And this court didn't not find that in a GM case.
Thank you, Mr. Steinis. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.